Hello.
Please.
Hello, Max. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hey, welcome. How are you on Black Friday, one day after the feast?
Black Friday. It's not Black Friday today or yesterday, was it? Was it? No.
Yeah, it is. Today's Black Friday. I already watched some funny videos about
Yeah.
people going crazy about merchandise.
Okay. It's Saturday here. Saturday morning.
All right, for you it's already morning. Well, good morning.
Thank you.
Maybe you slept right through the Black Friday, which is also not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's always good.
Yeah,
Yeah.
thank you so much for coming to our show. You know, it's a huge pleasure to have you in our show, to be able to talk to you and spread your wisdom with our listeners. You know, especially this emotionally and spiritually very deep and potential times we're living now. You know, we personally learned a lot from you throughout years, and you were one of those teachers who inspired us to search for truth and mirror to gain knowledge for others. And you, Max, are a spiritual activist, teacher, awakener, inspirer, artist. You play professional guitar. You also make true knowledge movies and many, many more things you do. And all I can say that you are just a huge gift for the humanity, and you know, a person like you, just to be able to walk the same planet with you and learn from your wisdom is really unbelievable experience. So thank you for coming to our show today, and looking forward to amazing topics we're going to cover today. So maybe first of all, at the beginning, we would love to ask, how is your health, and is everything fine after that accident which occurred with you?
Look, I'm getting there. I'm still pretty incapacitated. I mean, my ribs are starting to come good now. They're not too bad. My shoulder's still very sore. I'm not really strong enough to travel yet, so I've had to postpone my travel plans. But I'm coming good. I mean, I'll be good. I'll get better. You know, I'll bounce back. You always do. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. That's very, very humbling for you to have said those things. I don't quite know what to say to that. But
Thank you.
thank you very much. It's really wonderful to know that the words have inspired people.
Yeah, mirror ourselves with ourselves. So thank you for doing everything you do. So maybe first of all, at the beginning, you could please share what your story was of the awakening of yours and how your awakening path was occurring, because we know that you have been awakened from the very early age of yours.
Yeah, well, I kind of woke up when I was 4 years old that something was terribly wrong when I realized that people had to buy land, and I realized that we were controlled by an economic system. It was when I was about four, and I began to question things then, and I just sort of sat back in wonderment from when I was 4 years old. I thought everyone was mad. I thought everybody around me was crazy. I didn't understand what these people were doing and why they were pursuing the goals they were pursuing in life. And then when I was about 8 years old, I was looking through some encyclopedias. My mother showed me some encyclopedias, and I saw a picture of the pyramids and of the dinosaurs. And I wanted to know about dinosaurs, and I wanted to know how they built the pyramids. So I kind of put down all the comic books at about 8 years old and started looking into the pyramids and into ancient history and stuff like that. And when you go down that path of trying to figure out what happened in the past and where all of these relics and things around the planet came from, you know, one thing leads to another. Of course, you go down the ancient mysteries rabbit hole, you end up looking into ETs and extraterrestrials and all sorts of stuff, and then you end up getting into government cover-ups, and then you suddenly realize that the government is not what you think it is, and that reality is not what you think it is, and that nothing is what you think it is. And it all sort of started from there, from just wondering about the pyramids and the dinosaurs. So it was kind of a whole lifelong thing for me. It was kind of a hobby that I had on the side. I mean, I couldn't really function in society because I thought society was dysfunctional. So I kind of stepped outside of it and became a musician and always sort of worked for myself. And it gave me the freedom to express the art of my life and to also be able to have plenty of spare time to research all these things I was interested in on the side. So it was an interesting pathway, but it kind of all led me right to where I am now, to be doing what I'm doing now through no real plans of my own. I never planned to become a public speaker or speak on the radio or make films or any of that sort of stuff. But you know, you get to a stage in life where the global situation demands that you put your knowledge to use, and you start speaking out and trying to make a difference. So that's what we're all doing, I think.
Yeah, also very interesting that you mentioned ancient Egypt. That, you know, ancient Egypt is the thing which connects us. You know, all of our listeners and all of our, you know, speakers, they say that the awakening path just started with that interest of ancient Egypt and pyramids and stuff. And also you said that one of your presentations that if they lie to us about our past, why you think they don't lie to us about our current? So, you know, that ancient Egypt and everything, how connects, you know, past, future, now. Interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, if they're going to lie to us about the past, and they're going to lie to us about the present and where we're going in the future, what makes anybody think that they're telling us the truth about anything? I mean, you know, reality is not what we think it is. The system is not what we think it is. The whole government structure that we've got is not what we think it is. We don't come from where they tell us we came from. I mean, there's all sorts of evidence lying all over the planet which indicates that the history that they've told us is completely false. You know, and we need to look at that. I mean, it's important that we ask these questions. It isn't a matter of even solving the mysteries. It's asking the question of why have you been lied to? Why has it been covered up? Why are so many things hidden from the people? And why do we give our authority away to these people who hide these things so readily? You know, the human race is so well trained and so well programmed into this authoritarian mindset, and we need to break out of it. We've got to realize that all that exists on this earth, will, in, as far as humans go, is just people. We're all just people. There's no one of any more worth than anybody else, no more value than anybody else. We are all worthwhile. And when we look at our governments and our societies, essentially our governments are just people that we employ to manage things for us, to look after our countries, make sure the roads work, make sure the garbage is picked up, make sure the food flows the way it's supposed to make sure we're secure and safe and everything's good. And these people are all abusing the position they hold. They've created the entire global situation as the result of politicians abusing their office. I mean, all of it. I mean, every problem that we've got in our world is a result of politicians abusing their office, frankly. I mean, all the secrets that have been hidden, all the wars, all the damage, it's all due to legislation. It's all due to people in powerful places doing things that don't serve the people. And we need to really step back and look at this and realize that we have the power to change it if we can just realize that it's all just people. It's just people. Yeah. You know, we're as good as anybody else. No one has authority over you, you know. And if people are putting you in a state of hardship, well, they're abusing their authority, and we need to call it. And I think we've got an opportunity to do that now if we can create some unity around the planet. You know?
Yeah, it's really also have to speak up the truth because they're just not going to do it. I mean, they can't. How would they tell us the truth? They would have to stand up and say, I'm illegitimate. The company that we're running here, your government is illegitimate. Everything we tell you to do is illegitimate. Your authority is illegitimate. Everything would be a lie. So they would just have to get off stage to be the truth that some people actually think they are still, or a lot still. And we can clearly see that. You know, lately, with all these false flags going on, I don't want to really get too much into the Paris thing. There's a bunch of shows out there. Maybe just to note a couple things that we have found looking at that Paris attack. I always like to do the numbers. For example, I mean, I guess everybody is, a lot of people are quite aware that the Friday 13th has to do with the Knights Templar. You know, the original Friday the 13th was on the date 10/13/1307. Now just look at those numbers, 10/13/1307. Remember in January we had Charlie Hebdo happen on 7/1 at 11:30. All right. That's the same numbers, ones and threes and sevens. The day count from the day, when you count them from Charlie Hebdo shooting to Friday the 13th that just happened shooting, is exactly 310 days, which is a 13 reversed. And of course, it was 11/13, the month and the day. So it's just curious how these people seem to always play the same games with us, and it's just so utterly out in the open now that you know, I start scratching my head, why is it so obvious? Do they want us to notice what they're doing? Do they want us to come out with that information? Do they want us to tell them, you know, you're, this is all planned, this is all fake, and kind of call attention to it? What do you think?
Well, look, there's all sorts of reasons that I think they do these sorts of things. I mean, the numbers are powerful to them, which is why they always use certain numbers. But also, you know, we go down these rabbit holes and we start looking at these things and we spend time putting all these little pieces of the puzzle together, and then we bring this information out. And really, it's another rabbit hole. It's not actually addressing the problem. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's great to know. We need to know all these things and see how it all ties together. But they keep us distracted with these little investigations that we're doing all the time, and we're not standing up and calling this thing out for what it is. You know, indeed. I mean, you look at the Paris attack. People are calling hoax. They're calling this. They're calling fake bodies. They're looking at the numbers. They're doing all sorts of stuff. And what I do is I look at it and I say, well, okay, we expected this event to happen. I actually called it a couple of months ago on a radio show. I said, they're going to stage an attack. It'll be in Europe. They'll get all these refugees in. They'll stage some terror attacks. Then they'll bring down this police state. And France is the obvious choice to do it. So really what we've got to do is look at it and see, okay, well, we expected it. How's it being played? How are we being manipulated through this attack? We need to address the manipulation that's happening because of this attack. Now, we can speculate on all of these things of how it was done, but ultimately, we're people all around the world sitting at our computers, all we've got to go on is photographs. We can look at all the numbers and work it all out and go, okay, well, this is obviously part of their numbers scheme. It's all numbers fit, so it's obviously planned. You know, so it's great confirmation for that. But we've got to address the control group. We've got to start standing up and calling this out. You know, this Paris attack should not be used as a excuse to escalate the conflict that created the situation where the attack occurred in the first place. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, you don't take revenge on a few people that have been killed in Paris by going and killing civilians in Syria and bombing schools and bombing residents. Well, what are they even bombing there? How can they have all of these priority targets all of a sudden when the US has been bombing the place for 3 years? They haven't really hit anything yet. How have they suddenly got all these targets for France to go and bomb? And we're getting reports coming out of there of these whole suburbs and schools and everything just being obliterated, thousands upon thousands of people fleeing. Damascus, one of the oldest cities in the world, being completely reduced to rubble by these criminals that are running our governments. And even if it was ISIS that carried out the Paris attacks, well, who is ISIS? ISIS was created, funded by the West from the ground up straight away. They're receiving funding from the United States. They've got US hardware. They're getting all their attention, medical attention from Israel. Israel's buying oil from ISIS via Kurdistan. They're getting about $19 million a month in oil revenue from country. And Israel buys 75% of its oil from Kurdistan. Kurdistan's getting oil from ISIS. So you know, can we see what's going on here? Even if it was ISIS, it was our governments who did it. You know, what the French president has done, he's supported the creation of ISIS from the ground up. And now it's come to bite him. I don't even think it's come to bite him. I think the whole thing was staged. You know, I really do. And that's what I'll call because of how it's being used. Because every time we see one of these attacks, it's used to escalate the conflict in the Middle East. Just as it's starting to flag and just as it's starting to fail and world support is falling away from it, they stage one of these attacks and then suddenly the world wants to go and bomb Syria. I mean, it's so predictable and it's such a play. And we've got to really start looking at these things and calling things out for what they are. You know, we need some unity in our community. You know, we need people. And when I say unity, I'm not saying that we all join together and become one big happy family. I mean, we've got diversity in the human species. This is who we are. But we need the common respect for each other. We need to respect each other's diversity. And just that respect of each other's diversity will create a unity of spirit where we actually have the power and momentum to stand up and call things out for what they are. And we have everything we need at our fingertips to be able to rein this whole system back under control if we can just develop this respect for each other and stand up with one united, powerful voice and simply speak the truth, stop being politically correct and just call things out for what they are. We can change it very quickly if we can develop this respectful relationship by respecting each other's diversity, respecting each other's different opinions. It doesn't matter what you think, what your beliefs are, or that's you. That's fine for you to have that. And it's fine for me to be completely different. But there's no reason for us to hate each other or become enemies because we have a different opinion. That's what's wrong with the world, you know. And it's a shame. It's a shame. We've got a real potential here for change. We've got a real potential for freedom right now. You know, for the first time in human history, we actually have an opportunity for some real freedom. And if we don't take it, if we don't seize this opportunity, then we're going to have a lot of things stripped away from us. It's going to get very ugly if we don't choose to step into our power. So we need to do it. We really do.
Yeah, indeed. One more thing I wanted to bring in regarding the Paris, and then we can let that go. It reminded me of the Judgment of Paris, you know, the cause of the Trojan War, which is a mythological thing again. But Paris, what happened was that Zeus held a banquet or a party. And just look at the parallels to what happened here in Paris. So there was a banquet or party for the marriage of Peleus and Thetis, and who were Achilles' parents. And Iris, the goddess of strife, cares, and discord, she was uninvited. So she got mad and she threw a golden apple at the party. Yeah, and Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite claimed the apple, and they asked Zeus to judge which one of them was the fairest, prettiest. And so Zeus was very smart, and he wouldn't take that because he knew very well that the other two would hate him. So he gave that task to Paris. He appointed Paris to be the judge, you know, who was a Trojan mortal. And Hera, to sway Paris' judgment, she offered him the kingdom of Europe and Asia if he would decide for her. Athena, to sway his judgment, offered her wisdom and skill in war. And Aphrodite, to sway his judgment, offered him the most beautiful woman of the world. And then we all know Paris decided for Aphrodite and stole Helen, who happened to be married already to the king Menelaus of Sparta. And so all Greek went against Troia. And that was the beginning of the Trojan War. And if you look at some parallels here, Paris had to make in the last years some tough decisions. For example, last year Netanyahu had warned them not to recognize Palestine as a state, you know, openly. And I guess they did that. And if you know also the story why the Knights Templars were slaughtered by the king and the pope of France in 1307, it was because they were accused of doing fractional banking, because they were protecting the pilgrims, the religious pilgrims that went, you know, from Europe to the Middle East. And obviously those weren't all Christians. So they didn't like that, and they provided protection and banking. And about, I think, 5 years ago or so, France actually tried to get a Rothschild mega banker into court for this very same thing, fractional banking. And I guess last year they finally got, or this year, I'm not sure, they finally got him into court. And obviously, you know, that wasn't quite the right decision, maybe. Just these parallels are, you know, they jumped right out to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, all of that is definitely related. As soon as Bibi Netanyahu said that things are going to go very badly for France, they've made a grave mistake in recognizing Palestine as a state. Well, we knew that there was going to be trouble in France. And of course, a week later, we saw Charlie Hebdo, and now we see this. And it stands to reason that it's all interrelated. You can't stand up against the system in that way unless you're going to actually be honest about it. You know, which you can't do. You can't actually, you'll never get a politician to be able to stand up and say like the sort of things that I say, because he'd just get taken out. He can't stand up and do that without public opinion being with him. So you need to sort of seed this in the minds of the public and stand up and speak the brutal truth. I mean, you look at the report, the support that Jeremy Corbyn got in England for simply standing up and speaking the truth and calling things out for what they are. Of course, once he got into office and now he's there and he's the head of the Labour Party, he's kind of watered it down a lot because he's really liking the paychecks that he's getting, I imagine. So, you know, he's kind of lost it there. But we need people, we need a politician to be able to stand up and speak the truth and call it out. And if they don't, if they just beat around the bush and try to do things like use the legal system to take a Rothschild banker to court, well, this is what they're going to get. They need to call out the whole debt slavery system for what it is, you know, and free the people from it and say, we're going to kick these Rothschild banks out, we're going to get rid of this fractional reserve banking system, and call the system out as a slavery system for what it is. And point out the damage that this slavery system, this system of economic debt slavery has done to the world. You know, putting people in a state of artificial scarcity is what creates all the problems. It's what creates all the conflict. This you know, need to go and take over other countries in order to secure their resources because we believe we're in a state of scarcity. We're not. It's all because of the economic model. The economic model is designed to manufacture scarcity. That's its purpose. which puts us in a state of competition with each other. And, you know, we need a politician to call it out for what it is, and that's how we can heal it. But if they're just going to try to use the legal system and pretend that they're going to get any justice out of it without public consensus behind them, well, they're just joking. They're just going to get taken out.
Yeah, right, because nobody wanted to take responsibility again. So they use this dead entity or the you know, dead slave system to take care of it. And yeah, obviously, yeah. That's not going to work because they know how to handle that.
Yeah, they've got to step into their humanity and stand up and call things out as a living being and say, hey, this is wrong. This is wrong, and we need to fix it. But you've got to call it. You've got to be honest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you had lots of experiences in Gaza and how you spent time there and you were able to communicate with people face-to-face. So maybe what can you share now? What's happening there now behind the scenes of the mainstream of those lands?
What's happening there is shocking. It's basically open season on Palestinians. They're just going around exterminating Palestinians at the moment. They're just shooting them. They put checkpoints all through West Bank. And any Palestinian that goes out is likely to not come home. Basically, that's the situation in West Bank at the moment. And in Gaza. Gaza's horrendous, the situation in Gaza. And they're demolishing homes of people in West Bank, and they're saying anybody who assails a soldier, like throws a rock at a soldier, that person and their family gets their house bulldozed and we move them all to Gaza Strip. And you've got to understand, these are people that get shot at by soldiers. They get abused. They get such animosity directed at them and such abuse directed at them by the Israelis all the time. And if they respond in any way at all, they get their house demolished and they get moved to Gaza Strip now. This is what's going on there, and they're just shooting anybody they want and calling out knife attack. They're shooting 18-year-old girls. They're shooting kids. They're using bullets, little 22 bullets that are low, really low caliber. And they're saying, oh, these are just little bullets. These don't kill. These bullets actually will maim for life. Because the shells are so light, when these light 22 bullets go into you, they'll bounce around inside. They'll do major damage to your bones. They're shooting kids in the legs, so they're maiming kids for life. They actually will damage you more than a normal 22 bullet because they are such light caliber and they bounce around. And they do this under the guise of being humanitarian about it. But there's nothing humanitarian about shooting a child. Doesn't matter what you're shooting him with. The child's throwing a rock. They're throwing rocks because it's all they've got. It's the only weapons they've got against this military force which is destroying them. And the Western media just paints the wrong picture and paints Israel as the victims all the time. It says, oh my God, we've had 22 Israelis stabbed by Palestinians in the last couple of months. They don't talk about the, 78 or something Palestinians that they've murdered and the 7,000 that they've maimed in that same time. They don't go through any of that. We don't hear about anything that's done to the Palestinian people that makes us realize why they are doing what they're doing to Israel. All they're doing is resisting against constant Israeli terrorism. The real terrorists in Israel are the settlers in Jerusalem, the armed settlers, who are absolute right-wing extremist terrorists who go around terrorizing and attacking and maiming and shooting and kidnapping children and doing the most horrendous things to the Palestinian people every single day. And all of this is supported by our governments is the problem. Again, through legislation. And I believe that Palestine is truly the key to save the world. It is, because it's an open war crime. What's going on in West Bank, building settlements in occupied territory, this is an open war crime. And Gaza Strip especially. Gaza Strip is collective punishment, which is a breach of Article 33, Fourth Geneva Convention. This is an open war crime. And if it can be seen that the president of your country is offering financial support or aid in any way at all to the state of Israel, then it can be seen and proven that the politician, your president, whoever it is in your country, if he is doing this, he is a war criminal because he is supporting a country that is supporting war crimes. He is therefore in breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and he can be arrested immediately. This gives the people, all people in all Western nations, an opportunity to rein this whole system in. Look at the United States. Every politician in the United States has to sign a pledge that they will support the state of Israel. Otherwise, they don't get campaign funding. When they sign a pledge to support the state of Israel, they're signing a pledge to support war crimes and child abuse and human rights violations. This makes them a criminal. It also shows that they are giving their allegiance to a foreign nation, which is carrying out war crimes, in order to gain a position in the American government. How is this allowed? How is this allowed? Every single politician who signed the pledge to support Israel is a war criminal and should be arrested and can be arrested legally under their own legislation. You know, that's the thing. If these if these politicians believe their paper is real and believe their legislation is real, where there's a piece of legislation written in back in 1945 that says they're all war criminals and we need to clear this up before anything that they write on paper can be seen to be valid. Because if these people can be shown to be war criminals, which it can via their support for the rogue criminal state of Israel, then we can rein the whole system back under control. It makes all of their legislation invalid if they can be shown that they're supporting Israel. But the problem is that people have this whole stigma about, oh no, it's against the Jews and the Muslims, or it's the Palestinians and the Israelis, and you can't speak out against Israel because you're anti-Semitic and all this sort of stuff. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether it's France doing it to Germany. It doesn't matter whether it's Japan doing it to Paraguay. It doesn't matter who's doing it. It doesn't matter what ethnicity they are. It doesn't matter what their religious faith is. What we have in Gaza Strip is collective punishment, a breach of Article 33. The average age in Gaza is 17, so it's also child abuse. And it's being supported by hundreds, if not thousands, of politicians all around the world. It is a war crime, an open war crime of massive proportions, which gives us the tools, all the tools we need, to arrest every single politician on this planet that is supporting this state. And if we do that, we stop all the coal seam gas mining, we stop all the wars, we stop all the police state that's been brought in France, we stop every single piece of legislation and all the things that they're doing in each individual country by calling out the war crime that they are all supporting for what it is. And to me, that is a golden key that could heal the entire world. All we have to do is open up our hearts to the people in Palestine, and if we fail to do it, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And that's the sad truth of the matter.
Yeah, and the Palestinian lands, you know, we know that the history is very deep of those lands, you know, the Sumerians and the myths of Anunnaki and all of that history of the Palestinian land. So why exactly this land? Why all this crime is happening exactly in that place?
Well, it's because of the strategic value, the ancient history that it's got as well, but also the strategic value of owning that piece of land. When you control Israel and greater Israel, what they want to do, which will go from the east bank of the Nile to the west bank of the Euphrates, that's the plan, to go from basically from Egypt through to central Iraq and encompass all the top of the Sinai and Syria and all this sort of stuff. This is all to become part of Israel. This is what the war in the Middle East is all about. The ground war is about establishing the land of greater Israel. They're just expelling all the Arabs from the region. But when you look at the land, you've got control of the Caspian Basin. You've got control of, you know, if you control all this area, if you control from the Nile right through up into Iraq and up into the, you know, areas of Turkey and stuff as well, then you get control of the Caspian Basin. You get control of all the major oil fields in the area. You also get control of all major shipping routes, because major shipping goes through through Gibraltar and through Suez and then through the Straits of Aden. This is a lot of what the war in Yemen's about, because they wanted an autonomous government in Yemen, which would have put an open, autonomous government in control of the Straits of Aden, which would have given them a bit of a stranglehold over global shipping. And they may not have allowed a lot of the imperialist ships to go through, a lot of the warships, a lot of the stuff that, you know, there's a lot of stuff goes through those straits. So if you control this area, you control most of the global energy needs. You also control most of the global shipping needs, and you're also strategically placed to be able to strike pretty well any country in Europe if you need to from that position. And not too many people are going to want to strike you because you've got control of all the shipping routes and all the oil and all this sort of stuff. So it's a very, very strategically valuable location if you can get control of that whole area, which is what the plan of greater Israel is. So there's a reason for it. You know, apart from all the ancient history and apart from the fact that it's they call it the womb of civilization. I mean, there's a lot going on there that we need to know that they don't want us to know. You've never really been able to go and investigate the area too much because it's been kept a war zone for decades, you know. So as soon as we found about all these ancient mysteries were there, they turned it into a war zone. So no one could really go and check it out. But there's a lot of reasons why that is a very, very good location to have if you're someone who wants to dominate the world anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And also very interesting thing that we just play this like game. We just have to agree to play this game. Like it's always they sending us invitation for such events, like also those false flags. They are just before those events, they always just are warning us that something will happen. Of course, they are hidden in all those warnings from the plain sign, but they also are sending that invitation. It's like, for example, I once was watching the movie and we just made a slide after that. You know, when the movie starts, we have the symbol or icon of the Warner Bros. Pictures, and it says Time Warner Entertainment Company. So it just talks to you that Time Warner is like warning you that you're going to see some material that's going to, you know, brainwash the society and so on. So you agree with that unconsciously with seeing this symbol, and you just proceed to watch that movie without knowing actually that you agreed to play this game. So exactly the same is happening with those false flags and everywhere. So they have to send us that free will invitation to play this game. So
well, yeah. Yeah, they put the symbolism everywhere. They put the predictive programming everywhere. And we kind of buy into it and we sign into it. We give our agreements to it, our acquiescence to it. We don't really know we're doing it. And we've been very, very well trained in that respect.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, and that brings us to, you know, that rolling out of the police state and the technocracy and technology that is really just going in the direction of watching us the whole time. I mean, you know, just listen to your other show where you were talking about the rollout of the smart system and the retina display and how that's presented to us. You know, it's cool. It's valuable and it's even cute if you're talking about cameras for your kids' room, you know, that upload everything to the internet and then you can see it on your phone live wherever. I mean, that's good and well, but somebody else can see that too. And, you know, with the smart system, just smart. It's suggesting that we're stupid and the system is smart, smarter than us. You know, names like Siri backwards is Iris, which you know, that's what you see with that, and the retina display, obviously, that's looking back at you. I'd like to expand on that a little bit.
Well, yeah, look, the surveillance system is coming to a home near you, if it's not there already, or your home. I mean, it's everywhere, and it's being really, really rolled out at a massive pace, and it's coming all over the place. I mean, even the banks now, supermarkets, you go to supermarkets now here in Australia. I went to a major supermarket the other day, and there's only one checkout operator operating. And all of the rest of it, there's other, like three or four other checkouts there, but they're all closed. There's one checkout operator operating, and they've got all of these machines where you can actually go and pay yourself. So you don't actually use a checkout operator, and only one of the machines accepts cash. So it's all about getting people used to using their cards. It's far more convenient to use a card. It's a hassle. You've got to wait. It's a pain if you want to use cash. You know, you've got to wait for a checkout operator, or there's only one machine that takes cash, so you've got to wait in a queue. So they're just gradually corralling people and shepherding people into this whole digital click, 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 so that all currency becomes digital so they can remove cash from the system. Because once they digitize currency, then they've got you. And what they're doing with the smart system, I mean, everything's becoming smart in as much as it talks to each other and it records what's going on. For example, you get a smart fridge, it will record how many times you open the fridge. It will know what products you buy. You can actually order things through your fridge now. You can actually pay for stuff. You can order, hook up to the supermarket. You can order digitally off your fridge, and it will, you know, it'll take your credit card number, and then the supermarket will drop the stuff around to your house. You can do this. So it's all becoming convenient and digitized. And they're tracking everything that people do as well. When you track people's chat conversations and their social media conversations, you track who their friends are. You get a whole bunch of different platforms. Like you get Twitter, you get LinkedIn, you get Facebook, you get Sue, you get all these different social media platforms, and see which ones people take, and then cross-reference. Who are their friends on all platforms? Okay, well, so these guys are just acquaintances, but there's people here that you interact with all the time. These are your actual friends. checking mobile phone records. Okay, you've got numbers for some of these people as well, so they must be in your local area. So you track all your text conversations, record all your phone calls, everything, so they know what everybody's doing. Record everybody's search engine results, not just to see what people are searching for, but to see what people are thinking about. That's what it's all about. So when you get all this and you put it all together, and then you've got a smart system, smart fridge, smart toaster, smart car, smart everything, everything becomes smart, then they know exactly what you're doing. They track you every couple of minutes on your mobile phone. That's they've got a GPS on you. They locate it. They know everything you're doing, everywhere you're going, everything you're spending your money on, because it's all digitized. And everything has a dollar value. So, and it becomes all about a new currency that they want to introduce. And the new currency that they will introduce eventually will be energy credits, if we let them get away with it. You know, we'll realize that we can't use cash anymore. It's ridiculous. And all we're doing is we're spending it on stuff. So why not create something fair? We need people to be able to contribute to the system and be able to get back what they contribute to the system. This is what they promoted in the Venus Project, this sort of stuff, you know. You have a cashless society, resource-based economy, which is basically, if it's resource-based, then it's energy-based, okay? So it's what you put into the system is what you get out of the system. So it becomes about energy credits. So therefore, you have to have a job in this system. You can't be independent, even if you've got your little alternate society over here that you've built, your little permaculture community. Eventually, you're going to need to buy something from the outside world. You're not going to be 100% self-sufficient. You're going to need fuel for your car or whatever. There's something you're going to buy. And you're only going to be able to buy it with energy credits. And if you haven't put anything into the system, then you won't have any energy credits. So you'll have to get a job doing something within the system in order to have these energy credits, in order to be able to interact with the system, because it'll all be based on that. You know, when people think about this new global currency, they think about a euro or a dollar or something that's going to be a coin or a note that we all use. It won't be like that. It'll be digital, and it will be energy-based. And this is the technocratic system that they're putting in place. See, what they're doing is they're mapping the human terrain, and they can figure out where all the dissidents are, and they can do this through Facebook, through the videos we put out, through the conversations we have, and just interacting and linking everything up and seeing who connects with who. They can figure out where the problem areas are, and then when it's AI-controlled, which is what it will be eventually, I mean, if you've got a system, I mean, you're mapping the human terrain, and you've got all this information, you know what people are thinking, so you get to an area where, okay, you can predict where the dissidents are. These guys here are likely to do something that we don't like, so we can call them a terrorist cell. And the AI will identify that, because you have it all run by AI. You have the AI running everything, artificial intelligence running the whole thing, sending messages down to the different ministerial departments, you know, the Department of Energy, the Department of Finance, the Department of whatever, and saying, okay, well, you guys need to do this. And they're just getting a message from head office to say, okay, we've got to do this. They just do what their little compartment says. It's all compartmentalized. They don't know how it interrelates with everything else. But the AI is controlling it. If the AI says this group over here has a potential to be we'll call them a terrorist cell simply because they're dissidents, and then it sends a message out to the group of police to go out and take out this cell, then the police just go and do it. They don't question, because the letters, you know, the message came from head office. So it takes humanity out of the equation. It takes any type of consideration for humanity out of the equation, and it maps it all digitally, allows it all to be run digitally, and allows this artificial intelligence to create the perfect controlled computer digitally based slavery system. And that's what they're doing. That's what it's all about. That's why they're pushing us towards this digital world. That's why everything is going smart. That's why they want people to use credit cards and not cash, because they need to be able to track everybody's movement so they know who's interacting with who, so they can track every single transaction everybody makes. And you'll notice if you go shopping and you pay with a credit card, you buy certain things, you'll notice that on your Facebook page, certain ads will come up on your Facebook page or on other pages. Mm-hmm. The ads that will be targeted by what you bought at the supermarket.
Yeah, not just people that. I noticed even things I talk about will 20 minutes later pop up. Even if it's a person that I talk about that I haven't seen in 2 years or spoken about in 2 years, and I just mentioned that name in a conversation, it will show me something about this person, even though I've not looked for their person on Facebook.
Exactly. So So, it's doing this with your search results as well. So they know what people have been searching for. So when you search, it will tailor your search results for what it believes you want to see. You could have Christina do a search and you do a search for the same thing and both get different search results based on what you normally search for and what things you normally do, which is a very interesting thing. So the internet isn't a place now where you can just go and do a search and expect to find out everything you need to know about this particular topic. You're going to get search results that are tailored for your particular tastes. And this is very dangerous. This is a way of hiding information from us. And it's a way of really, really limiting our knowledge. You find that all the social interaction has been taken out of things like YouTube and stuff as well. Even with Facebook, it's much more difficult to interact with people than what it used to be. So they've managed to get us out there, get us all out there and give us all this freedom. And now that they know where the little bits of dissent and disrespect for government are, now they're kind of cordoning these areas off and making these no-go areas for other people. So it's getting very hard to share information through the internet, through all these metadata laws and all the stuff they're doing now. But that's what it's all about. It's about... It's been a kind of a Trojan horse, the internet. It's been very beneficial for us in as much as we're able to connect with each other and we're able to research a lot of information. Of course, there's so much information out there to research and so many rabbit holes to go down that everybody spends their time doing that rather than addressing the control grid. And a lot of people aren't interacting out in the real world anymore. They're just doing it online and believing they're making a difference. But, you know, you've got to be involved in the real world as well. So it's been kind of a Trojan horse. It's been very beneficial to us, but it's also been very, very beneficial for them in giving them the ability to map the human terrain, and that's really what it's been for.
Yeah. I also just enjoyed your movie, Transformation, really, really very interesting. And the way you talked about that, it's mankind's desire to escape humanism, escaping the pain we have, which we created ourselves. So that's very interesting. And also the memory we had, like we were able to communicate, you know, and teleportate and just to communicate for distance. And we forgot that memory we had naturally. So we created this technology in order to just has this alternative way to communicate and to remember ourselves. So technology, as I see, can be like reminder of what we can to do naturally. But it's up to us whether we remember that in time.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been trained to forget. We've been taught to forget through many means, through our diets, through our education system, all sorts of stuff. This is why we take to instantaneous communication so quickly. It seems so natural to us because we can already do these things if we had access to our higher senses. Now, the analogy that I like to use is, they've given us this digital clunky communication system when we've really got these incredible higher senses and higher powers, but they've replaced it with this machine system. And it's like if I wanted to sell you a little mini miner or a Volkswagen, but you're a Lamborghini driver, then you're not going to come and buy my little Volkswagen or Fiat or whatever, you know. But if I come and steal your Lamborghini and you've got to get to work tomorrow, then you're very likely to come and buy my little Volkswagen. So that's what they've done. They've stolen our Lamborghini, and now they're trying to sell us this little old Beetle that they bought back in the 1960s and give us this clunky little shoebox to drive around in rather than letting us have our Lamborghini. And that's kind of what they've done. They've taken all of our higher senses and our knowledge away from us, all of our life skills away from us. They've taught us to believe that we are inadequate and that we're flawed and that we could be so much better than what we are, because we could be. But they've taught us to believe that it can only be achieved via technology. But the technology that they're giving us, even though it may enhance us from what we are, it's who controls the technology. I mean, there's nothing wrong with technology. I love technology. We're talking to each other via technology. I love the internet. I love my computer. I love playing electric guitar. I love technology. There's nothing wrong with technology. The only thing that could ever be wrong with technology is what is going on in the mind of the hand that controls the technology. And that's the problem. And when you look at this control grid that's been put in place, you've got to understand, this is being put in place by the very people who've created the situation that we see in the world today. Do you really think it's a smart thing to do, to hand control of your life, every aspect of your life, and every aspect of everybody's life, into the hands of these people? Now, this is not a wise move for the human race to make. You know, just looking at the state of the world, the people who are bringing all of this stuff into supposedly keep us safe and orderly are the very people who've created the situation which has created the need for them to do this. You know, problem, reaction, solution. They're creating all the mayhem through legislation. Every problem we've got on the planet, it doesn't matter what it is, it's a result of some politician in an office somewhere who wrote some rubbish on a piece of paper that allowed it to happen, and we didn't call him out. We allowed him to abuse his office. So, you know, we've got to really see what's being put in place here. It's not being put in place to keep us safe. It's not being put in place to keep things orderly. It's being put in place to keep people completely under control and map the human terrain and keep tabs on everybody and make sure they're good little chattels and turn the whole place into a big department store. One big global department store whereby we just function on a system of permanent growth and destroy this earth that we live on by harvesting all the resources that we can, turning them into rubbish and discarding people along the way. I mean, that's where we're going. That can be the only result of continuing to support this economic model. So we've got to see it, and we've got to call it, and we've got to not do this. And again, I mean, even with the smart grid and all of this sort of stuff, you want to address it, it's very difficult. But again, you can understand the people that are putting all this legislation that's allowing it in place are the same people who are supporting the war crime of Gaza. Call out the war crime and you stop the smart grid. It's the same thing, you know. It always comes back to the same thing. You know, there's a common cause for every single problem that we face on this planet, which is it's kind of steps to get to the cause. There's a couple of causes, but each cause has its own cause. Like the major cause of problems on this planet is legislation that's put in place by government. The cause that happens is because these politicians are in abusive office, and the cause of that is because we don't call it out, and the cause of that is because we don't respect each other because we're trained not to. We're trained to see, you know, diversity as insult and attack anybody who thinks differently to us. I mean, it's a joke. So you look at that process, the simple matter of us respecting each other and respecting our own diversity enough to have the strength and the courage to stand up and call things out, suddenly addresses the abuse of office, addresses the legislation. We can call them all out for war crimes, and suddenly the smart grid stops because the legislation creating the smart grid was put in place by war criminals. You know what I mean? It's all interrelated. That's how you stop the whaling. That's how you stop the coal seam gas mining. That's how you stop everything that they're doing. That's how you, all of these things, all these problems that we have. You know, we go down the little compartmentalized approach to deal with that specific problem. You know, how do I deal with the smart grid? You've got to petition the politicians, got to do this, got to stop that. Well, yeah, we do all that, fine, but let's just say, hey, the guy who wrote this out is a war criminal. Let's address that, because then we take out all the problems straight down the track. You see what I'm saying? You can always bring it back to the same thing. And it comes back to us opening our hearts to respect each other and standing up to call out this massive war crime and these massive human rights abuses we're seeing all around the planet for what they are. You know, war is terror. You know, we need one international law. War is illegal. Let's do that. If we don't do that, then international law means nothing. So let's stand up and call it, folks. Let's stand up and call it. Let's step into our hearts and call this out, and we can heal everything.
No, it's just really important to recognize and realize this duality we live in, and build a certain respect, like you just said, towards it. You know, we will have this one world thing. It's really up to us how it's created, and otherwise, or yeah, in other interviews we were talking about the you know, consequence of two races, you know, the nature race and the techno race, and is that something that we if we recognize this duality and maybe filter it now into a unifying process, we can escape, or is that something we're doomed to do anyways and go through?
Well, it's an interesting thing, you know. Like the problem with the technocratic system is that it's going to be all-encompassing, so it's going to be very hard for... I mean, I often thought maybe the human race would split. You'll have... it'd be like back in the old days, apparently, when there was the Atlantean culture and the Rama culture. You know, one was very technology-based, and one was very nature and spiritual-based. And they ended up having a major war, of course. I mean, it could be something like that, but I don't think the world geographically would allow that too much. The problem with building alternate communities and things is that we forget the reason why we built the alternate community. We did it because we need to step out of this one, because it's heading for the cliff and dragging the whole world with it. And it doesn't matter where in this earth, on this world, on this planet, whatever it is, that we build our ultimate community, eventually it's going to get eaten up with the rest of the system if we don't address the system. So, you know, I really believe that we don't even need to construct a new system to present to the people. This is a big problem with people. It's saying, well, if you're going to bring this system down, what are you going to replace it with? And my argument is that there's nothing inherently wrong with this system. The only thing that's wrong with it is our belief in authority and our willingness to put aside morals in order to follow what is legally right. You know, we should do what is morally correct rather than what is legally correct. You know, if legislation interferes with morals, then that legislation is invalid and it's an abuse of office. You know, if we could simply adopt a moral perspective, imagine if we did the right thing in all that we do. The system itself would have to change with us. This whole system is based on sociopathy. It's based on our belief that we live in scarcity, so we're constantly competing with each other and discarding humanity along the way. But if we actually operated according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters, the system would have to change with us. It would have to change into something that actually supported humankind. At the moment, it's something which is highly detrimental to humankind. At the moment, humankind supports the system. We need to turn it on its head by simply changing our own perspective and operating according to moral parameters and asking the right questions. You know, ask questions of these people. Even if you ever got to go to court, you ever deal with these people, ask questions. Ask them why they believe they have authority over you. I mean, it's ridiculous. We don't ever ask the right questions. We just bow to authority all the time. We believe that these people are our rulers, and so we allow them to get away with what they're doing. You know, I really believe that if we suddenly refused to do anything that interfered with our moral compass, we could change the world in a day. We really could. We don't need to construct a new system. People aren't going to want to step out of one system and into another. But if we change our moral compass and we operate according to moral parameters, the system has to change with us. It has to be that way. There's no choice for it but to change. You see what I'm saying?
Mm. I think a lot of people are scared that with a change of the system, also their whole belief card house will come to a fall, you know, not their whole spiritual aspect of life will also have to change. Just look at money, you know, if we were to abolish money, at first it's a really hard thing to think of, because how are you going to exchange value that way? And then if you get deeper into that, you see there is no real value in money, that is really just a transport piece of paper. But you don't have to abolish, obviously, money, as we've taken apart in earlier shows, you know, is connected to moon energy, as visible in the word. And you don't have to abolish the goddess, you know, and you don't have to not honor the goddess if you like to do that anymore by abolishing something material in this world. I think that's important to understand for people, that they're not going to lose their, you know, immaterial things that nobody can take from them.
Well, yeah. The thing is, you know, the problem isn't money. I mean, money, I can see a world where we don't need money. I think it would be fine, but a lot of people can't. So that's fine. We can still use money.
As an example,
a lot of people are quite attached to this stuff. The problem isn't really money. It's how money's issued. It's where it comes from. It's because it's issued by a private bank and it's debt-based. You know, it's a debt-based system, so that we're always kept in a state of constant scarcity. That's the issue. You know, if we put in an honest monetary system, it'd change everything. You know, so right. It isn't that money itself is the problem. It's the way money is run, where it comes from, and what it does. The fact that it's designed to create scarcity. So, yeah, people have this big stigma about this when we talk about these sorts of things. That's what I mean. They don't have to, if done right, people don't have to step out of this system. They don't have to collapse this system. The system doesn't really have to change. We just have to start being honest with ourselves and treating people with respect. This is why I finish every show with In Lakesh, I am another yourself. If we treated each other like ourselves, the world would change in a day, you know, and the system would have to change with us. Everything would still be here. It would still be the same. We'd still be going on with our lives and doing a lot of the things we're doing. But we'd have a lot more free time. We wouldn't be in a state of scarcity, so we wouldn't be competing with each other. There wouldn't be any need for all these wars and things. I mean, there's no need for any of these wars. None of them. I never met anybody anywhere in the world who wants a war. The only people who want wars are bankers and politicians. That's it. They're the only people who benefit from wars, you know, and they do it at the expense of the people. So, you know, and all this, it's all interrelated. It's all to do with this economic system. So, and people are just kept in this state of fear. And it's their fear of speaking out, their fear of saying that they're calling for a new system or thinking they're calling for a new system. But you, like I'm saying, you don't have to. All you've got to do is step into your heart to speak out. I mean, what you guys are doing, all you've got to do is step into your heart. You know, it isn't that I want to bring down the government or bring down the system and create a state of chaos. I don't want to do that. I mean, I prefer a state of anarchy where we're all self-governance, but I can appreciate that it's going to take a few generations to get us back to a point of self-responsibility where we're capable of anything as great as self-governance. Yeah, it will take a little while for that to happen. But we don't have to bring down this system. We don't have to have revolutions or anything. All we have to do is change our moral compass, and the system has to change with us. And it's people's fear of doing that, you know, fear of being the old one out, fear of giving to others and then not having someone give back to them and them being depleted and all this sort of stuff, you know. People's expectations on giving that they put, you know. Very often when we give to people, we give to them because we want something from them. We want them to like us, or we want them to think that we're cool or whatever. And so really we're only giving to ourselves. It's a selfish act, you know. And very often we give to people and then we expect, well, hang on, I did a favor for you, so you got to do this for me. So really what you gave them was a debt that they never asked for. That wasn't a gift, it was poison, you know. So, you know, we're afraid to give, we're afraid to be who we are, and we're afraid to speak the truth. You know, we've been absolutely cowed in that respect. We police our own thoughts. We're scared of what people will think about us if we speak the truth and speak out and speak our mind. We're trained to be politically correct. You know, I really believe that a strong heart and an honest voice, it's in everybody. It's in everybody. The ability to do that is in everybody. And if people were to simply call things out, speak the truth, be polite, ask the right questions in a public enough way, then they'll make a difference, you know. I mean, all the difference that I've made to people, and even with what you said, the beautiful thing that you said at the start of the show, that you've had that experience simply because one person chose to speak their mind and speak the truth. And that's all that was. And I'm just nobody special. I'm just a person who decided to speak my mind. And we all have the ability to do this. And it makes a difference. One person can make a difference. I mean, just the fact that I've reached you people shows that I made a difference in two lives, you know, and I'm sure I've made a difference in more than two lives. So, you know, we all have the ability to make some positive change on this planet if we choose to open up our hearts and speak our truth. And it really comes down to that. We don't have to bring this system down. We've just got to call out those running this system for what they are and expose the corruption and expose the bad intentions of those who have maneuvered themselves into positions of power, you know. What we've got at the moment on the planet is a kakistocracy. It's a kakistocracy where the worst possible people suitable for the job have managed to maneuver themselves into a position where they are now running the planet, and they are doing things to benefit themselves to the permanent detriment of all the rest of the people on the planet. And it's a criminal cabal, and it's going to continue if we don't call it. We don't have to change the system. We don't have to collapse anything. We just got to call out these criminals for what they are. And there's plenty of tools here to do it. So let's do it. That's my argument anyway.
Yeah. Very interesting. And also how I see it's also one energy. It's like the perspective how we look at that energy, and we have to just call it out, then embrace everything, and then to switch that energy flow to the other current so that we can change something as the same as we can use money for just stopping deforestation or just for the other, you know, thing. So just have to call that, embrace everything, and to use the same energy but only in different flow. Also, another question I would love to ask you is about Russia's role in current division gameplay. So what is your opinion? What's Russia's role here?
Look, it's pretty interesting what's going on in with Russia and Syria at the moment. I think Russia's seen the refugee crisis that's been created in Europe and realised that this is coming to its borders, and it needs to step in. And I think Putin's been a player as long. They're all players. I mean, all these politicians are all playing the same game ultimately. But I think he was playing the bad guy for a while, and he was willing to do that and just sit back and see how things panned out. But he's saying that it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And if he doesn't step in and do something, if Russia doesn't step in and stop this flow of refugees into Europe, but it's going to threaten Russia as well. And they're also talking about expanding, bringing Turkey into Europe, which would be an interesting thing. If they bring Turkey into the EU, then you're going to see, then the border of the EU is going to be the border of Iraq and Syria. That's going to be an entrance. You're going to be able to flow straight across from Iraq and Syria into the EU. So that'll be an interesting thing. But I think Putin, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where this is going. It's interesting now that Turkey shot down a Russian plane.
Yeah.
There's no reason for them to have done that. That could escalate into something pretty drastic. But the fact that it has, the fact that Turkey has shot down a Russian plane should show that they're not all fighting the same people. I mean, you know, isn't Turkey supposed to be fighting ISIS? Isn't Russia fighting ISIS? So what is even the reason to level a shot at a Russian jet? There's no reason to shoot at this, even if it came into Turkish airspace, because they're both fighting the same people, aren't they? We're told where they are. So obviously they're not. I think it could get pretty ugly, but I think Putin's doing what any responsible president would do. It's interesting to see Putin seems to be one of the sanest men on the world stage at the moment. Not that I trust him. I think there's a certain amount of Putin worship that's going on as well, and I don't trust that. I don't trust any politician at all. But I think that he's saying, well, look, this is just out of control. We've got to quell the flow of refugees into Europe. We've got to stop all of it. I mean, ISIS is out of control. It's so out of control. They got tanks, fleets of tanks. They got howitzers. They got artillery. They got, I don't know how many hundreds of brand new Toyota Hiluxes and US Humvees. They're getting massive amounts of oil getting shipped out through Kurdistan. Like I said earlier, 19 million a month they're making in oil. Just in oil shipments alone, so it's just out of control. And Obama has just said that he's going to he's just pledged $800 million for moderate rebels in Syria. There are no moderate rebels in Syria. This is ISIS. So he's going to give $800 million worth of weaponry, basically. I'd say he's going to put in there, and knock just get off a pallet of money down there. So it'll be $800 million in weaponry. It's just going to get given to these people as well. So it should be seen that there is no civil war in Syria. What's going on in Syria is a covert war, a covert invasion that's been carried out by the United States and Israel and Syria and its allies, you know, Saudi Arabia and countries like this, Qatar. And it's all about establishing Greater Israel. That's what it's about. I think Putin can see this. But even he's not calling it out. I mean, why isn't he calling out Greater Israel? Why is he negotiating with Israel? Why aren't people calling this out for what it is? Like I said, Israel is receiving oil through Kurds, which is being bought from ISIS. There's a pipeline that goes from Iraq straight down to Israel through Syria that ISIS don't seem to be bombing that pipeline. I wonder why. You know, if they're this terrible terrorist Islamic State army rampaging across Syria, why aren't they attacking Israel? Why aren't they taking out any Israeli assets? Why aren't they blowing up Israel's pipeline? Why are they getting funding and medical support in the Golan Heights? You know, so I think Putin's seeing all of this, but again, he's not calling it out. So that's the question. He's doing a few things. He's going and bombing certain things, and he's making a play, but he's not being honest. He's not really calling things out for what they are. He said, oh, yeah, well, there's 40 countries that are supporting ISIS, and many of them are NATO nations. And he said that, yeah, there's oil going through Kurdistan. He said a lot of stuff that's true. But he's still not calling things out completely and making a, you know, he has the opportunity to get to the UN and just stand up and call it out. And he would have the support of so many nations if he did it. So why isn't he doing that? You know, there's a bigger play going on here. I don't trust any of them.
Yeah. And also, if looking from the higher perspective, it's like a whole plan of this cleansing now for the humanity, literally. So also, you know, the wars we are having, arguments we are having, is like a cleansing for something new to come. And also we know that you had some full circle project in Amazon. So how that is going now, and what maybe you can share here?
The full circle project, it's not just for the Amazon. The full circle project is a mechanism that people can use to link up together in their own community. Like we need action to be taken. It's time for people to get active on the ground in their own community. We need grass fires all over the planet. So what the Full Circle Project is about creating the mechanism that you can do that. You can go and log on to the project, sign up to the Community Connector and do a search for other people who have signed up to the project and find people in your area. And then you can get together. You can meet them. You can organize a meeting. You can go and meet down at a coffee shop or whatever, get to know these people, and start formulating some sort of an action that's going to work in your community. Look at a local issue. Identify a local issue in your community, in your village, in your town, in your suburb, and form an action group to deal with that issue. But deal with it via the concept that what's created that problem is legislation. It's an abuse of office, because it's all abuse of office. Every problem we've got on the planet is abuse of office. So identify a problem, identify a topic in your area that you think you can use to maybe get the attention of your neighbours and some other people in the area, might maybe get them on board to address this issue, and then use that issue to expose the abusive relationship that you have with government to the people around you in your community. That's really the best thing we can do at the moment. We've got to have people realise that they're in an abusive relationship with their government, and that they have legal tools available that they can use to end this relationship. And if we stop this abusive relationship, then we can heal everything. We can heal the whole global problem. We can heal everything all at once if we deal with this abusive relationship. So that's what Full Circle Project is really about. It's a mechanism to link people up and for people to be able to post what action they're taking, what their groups are doing, and inspire other groups to take the same action and get involved, you know. When you see that people are doing things and they're having meetings, and even if there's only two or three people that come for the first meeting, it doesn't matter. You've still met some people. You've started it off, and there'll be more people come from that point. You know, we can build these grass fires, we can identify these issues, and we can go for the throat. And I believe that when you've got whole communities, you've got pockets in these communities of all these different people identifying different issues. Doesn't matter. It might be people addressing the preschool issues in their community, or the community garden issues in their community, or the problem of the drainage in their community, or the garbage collection. Doesn't matter what it is. But you have all these different people identifying all these different problems, and every one of them is calling abuse of office. Everyone's calling out for the legislation that created the problem and for the person who enacted that legislation to be held accountable. You're going to find that when this is coming from all different areas all around the planet, and everyone is addressing it at the same root cause, abuse of office, the whaling issue, abuse of office, the coal seam gas mining, abuse of office, the problem with the drainage, abuse of office, the problem that the London flooded and they didn't clean out the Thames last year, abuse of office, the fact that, you know, we got signed into the EU and all this stuff's happened, abuse of office. All this stuff is abuse of office. The fact that Fukushima's happening, why was that happening? Why were those safety standards not met? Abuse of office. Why are these people required to sign this APEC pledge before they get electoral funding in the United States? Abuse of office. There was someone who wrote the legislation that created that problem, created that situation. That's abuse of office. Why is the war starting? It's abuse of office. Why are they able to take control of our water table and claim that they have the right to water now that is on my property that falls from the sky? How did that legislation get in place? Who abused their office and wrote that legislation and put us in a state of hardship like this? Because it's not what we employ them to do. And are these people war criminals? Are these people supporting the state of Israel? You know, have this sort of approach to every single social issue that we've got, and you're going to find these politicians running for the hills, absolutely running for the hills. And we can address every single problem that we've got by calling out this abusive relationship that we have with government. And we've got every single tool we need to do it. People just have to gain the strength in their hearts to do it. And so with Full Circle Project, you can create a support group around you, a group of like-minded people who are all awake, who can all use this mechanism to identify a problem in their community and then go for the throat and call out the abusive relationship that created the problem. Don't try to put a Band-Aid on the problem. Address the issue that created the problem to begin with, which is the politician who wrote that stuff on paper, who said that this could happen. See, we don't ever go for that, and I believe that if we go for that, you're going to see these politicians start stepping into line pretty damn quickly, you know, because we can get all of them, basically. We can replace a lot of them, because they're all a bunch of criminals. They're all in abusive office, so, you know, let's call it. And that's what we can do with Full Circle Project, so that's what it's about. It's really just about linking people up and getting supplying them with a common focus. So they can keep their individuality, they can still identify the problem that is the most dear to their heart, but don't identify with that problem and don't try to address that problem through the parameters that the government gives you. Go for the throat of the government that created the problem to begin with and address it from that respect. don't think they have authority over you. They're just people that you employ to manage things for you, and they've done a god-awful job and created this issue. And then they're giving you the stuff that they say you should do to fix it. No, 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 no. We're going to address it from where it was created, which is you. So let's talk about that. And I think if we start doing this, we're going to see some really big changes on this earth. I really do.
This really sounds like a good gradual way to, also pass along knowledge, because we know that there's a process, for this mass awakening to happen on an individual level. Like you say, real truth has to be realized. We know that the ancient priesthoods believed that the great mass and mankind awakening, has to be kind of carefully fed, according to the state of the soul or whatever. It needs to be protected, and I think this is a good way to, wake each other up and initiate ourselves, relearn to initiate ourselves to this flow with a natural kind of law.
Well, yeah, for sure, and we need to know that we have support. We need to know that we're supported in what we do. We need to know that there are like-minded people around, that we're not alone in our endeavors. Just having that's even if it's just a small group of people, just having that support group around you can make a huge difference in people's lives, because there's so many people that I get letters from and so many people that comment and say, I'm awake and I'm alone. I feel isolated. I don't know what to do. So when you can get onto Full Circle and you can find some people in your area, like I said, even if it's only one or two people to begin with, it doesn't matter. It will grow. The group will grow. You've got that support group. You've got like-minded people around you, and you it gives you the confidence to want to push things forward. So that's what we need to do. People need to have that confidence, and not going to have it if they don't have that support group around them. Because many people who are awake feel very isolated, and they feel very powerless to do anything about it and to do anything about this system. But they shouldn't feel powerless, because we do have the power to create change, and we can do something positive here. So, yeah, please, if you're out there, please do log on and sign up to the Full Circle Project. Do a search in your area and find people to talk to. Find a support group around you. It's going to make a difference in your life. It's inspiring, it's confidence building, and it's motivational to have a support group of like-minded people around you. So that's what it's for, really. And I've said it enough with the focal point. I mean, I think people understand now about this abusive relationship, and they realize that there is a common cause to all the problems that we face. And like I said, when you go through it, the common cause is legislation, which is created by an abusive office, but really it's because people let it, and people let it because they're disunited. Well, this is the first step in creating that unity, helping people maintain their individuality and their uniqueness, but creating a unity of spirit. This is what Full Circle Project can do, create that unity of spirit and link people up with a common focal point. And once you start talking about it from this perspective to people in your local community, people who aren't conspiratorial, you don't even have to go down any conspiracy rabbit holes with any of this stuff. You just got to identify the root cause of the problem, which is legislation, and the abusive relationship which has allowed that legislation. And you talk to this to the common guy on the street, the farmer, the banker, the butcher, the candlestick maker, people who don't look at any of this conspiracy stuff, and they get it. They get it, and they see that there's a way out, and they see that there's actually something they can do in their own community by simply standing up and calling it out and asking the right questions. This appears to be an abusive relationship. It appears that this has all happened because of legislation. Can you please show cause why you shouldn't be held accountable for this situation you've created by the legislation you wrote? Can you please show us why you shouldn't be held accountable for that? Because you've created this incredible state of hardship, and you've created this environmental catastrophe or whatever it is we're dealing with. So, and people get it, and they see that they actually can make a difference. And so you don't have to be conspiratorial. You don't have to talk about numbers. You have to talk about the Illuminati. You have to talk about spirituality even. The spiritual awakening, a little spark goes off in their minds once they actually realize, do they have the power to actually call these politicians out? You see this little spark go off in their minds. You see their soul open up. The glazing removes from their eyelids and their eyeballs, and their eyes kind of widen. And a little spark of life appears inside them again. And I've seen this in people. And that's why I think it's such a powerful mechanism, if people can actually do it and use it.
Yeah. Yeah, and all those people are awakening and they talk about that loneliness like you just expressed. But we don't have to forget that we are not alone. You know, all the planet, all the nature is trying to help us. You know, we have all those plant teachers and, you know, those shamans who are just able to help us to, with the help of the nature, to help us heal. So, and also we know that you had experience in Amazon with ayahuasca and plant teachers. So maybe you can share what were the most important messages you received during those ceremonies, if you can, of course.
Well, look, you know, some of the, it's very, very difficult to go through. There's so much information comes through ceremony. But what I've really learned from ceremony, I mean, it's confirmed many things for me. It's confirmed the oneness of the human spirit. It's confirmed that this is really just a big game. It's about opening our hearts. The whole thing is about opening our hearts. Love can truly heal the world. You know, it really can. And we're afraid of that. We're afraid to admit that, and we're afraid to love. We're afraid to live, and we're afraid to die. So we're missing out on the experience, and the experience is about opportunity. It's about co-creation, and we can create any reality we want this to be. You know, it's a collective projection. It really is. Based on what the collective consciousness believes reality to be, and it can be anything we want. I've had so many healing experiences and so many insights come to me from ceremony, from various ceremonies, and not just plant medicines, but just different jungle medicines such as Cambo. Cambo is quite an amazing medicine, the frog venom, a very, very healing, gets all the toxins and heavy metals out of your body. And that sort of stuff's been really beneficial. But the ayahuasca ceremonies, they've really taught me that it's about love, it's about opening your heart, it's about removing judgment and realizing that we could actually change this world so quickly, so very quickly. It's you know, when you really go through things such as the electric universe and the holographic universe and understanding such as this. This can all be seen in ayahuasca ceremony. It's like your higher senses come online and you have the ability to communicate with that which is outside visible light. And you soon realize that is the real world and this is the dream that we're living in now, because we just don't have access to most of what's going on around us. We're only using five senses. We're experiencing about 3% of reality. And we think this is all there is, but it's not. There's a whole bunch more stuff going on. So it's very difficult to communicate these things to people, but it's a life-changing experience. I don't know how anybody who's done an ayahuasca experience could ever go and join the military or could want to steal from somebody or could want to hurt somebody. Not if they did the ceremony properly and it really sank in and they really got the message. But you'll find people will do some ceremonies and they're so scared and freaked out that they run away and they'll never do it again because it shows them too much of their self. Because that's what it'll do. It'll peel away the layers of your personality like an onion and it'll show you all the ugly parts of yourself, all the things you need to heal very gently. And once you've realized these things and you've realized the changes that you need to make, she's very gentle. She doesn't want to hurt you. She just wants to help you realize your potential. And that's what I've got from ceremony. I've realized that we are all one, that we can change things very, very quickly if we choose to, and that it's extremely important that we maintain this knowledge and these medicines. Yeah, we can't allow the Amazon to be destroyed. We can't allow these medicines to be taken from us. I think actually banning some of these medicines is one of the greatest crimes that's ever been done to us. I think the banning of things like cannabis is a crime against humanity. This is an incredibly healing plant that would even heal the planet if it were not outlawed, because we wouldn't have all these mining industries and all this. There's, you know, so much damage that's been done because we're not able to use hemp. So all of these things are related. I don't think that there's any plant that should have any legislation surrounding it at all. I think that nature is here for a reason, and we should have access, full access, to be able to use these things. I think ayahuasca, I mean, it should be an option for kids to do ayahuasca in the last year of high school, I think. I think it would be highly beneficial. We wouldn't see all these wars and all this. Mm. We wouldn't have people running off joining banking cartels. Probably wouldn't be very good for the system, though. So that's the problem with all of these things. That's why they don't like them, because they wake people up to the farce that they're living in, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the most important thing, as you said, is to bring all scattered parts of yourself to one center, one heart of yours. And like also you mentioned, you had experience in 2008 when you was sitting in the center of your heart, and you know, you saw that fractal in and out, not only sitting in the heart, but also sitting in the one that is sitting in the heart. That's very interesting how, you know, those portals are going through the heart and just deeply in and out, and how everything is interconnected, and the importance of bringing every experience to that center of yours from which you can change everything you do.
Yeah, that was a very, very interesting experience, the fractal nature of reality. You know, what I got from that, and what I've also got from ayahuasca, is that life is simply a series of still images. Your consciousness is running through what is essentially still moments in time, and billions of times a second you have an opportunity to go in whatever direction you want. Reality can change at any time, and you're simply running through still images. That it's all internal. It's all internal. I fully believe this is a holographic universe, and this is all internal. Everything we're experiencing is eternal, internal. But it's giving us an opportunity to know ourselves. Like this is why I keep coming back to Gaza. I think that's what that's for. I think that's why it's so open on the global stage, because it gives us an opportunity to open up our heart chakra, to open up and step into our humanity and realize what this is about. Because it's about love. It's about learning how to love. And there's so much on this earth that has been perverted and distorted in that respect. Even looking at the Paris attacks, you know, all these people are murdered in this horrendous way. And it pulls the heartstrings and the emotion of the entire planet. Why? Because we all love life and we love people and we feel so bad that these poor innocent people were murdered. So what do we do with that love? We go and murder more innocent people. So it gets convoluted and perverted. So they use that emotion, that love and that empathy for humanity to convince us to go and destroy humanity. This is what they're doing, and they're perverting everything, all of our emotional states, and they're controlling us through manipulating our emotions, but they're turning them against themselves. They're turning love into war, and you know, war is peace, and it's ridiculous, all the stuff that they do. We've got to go and kill massive amounts of people in order to bring about peace. Well, yes, I guess it's going to be very peaceful on Earth when everybody's dead. I guess there won't be a noise anywhere, but that isn't really the type of peace we're looking for, you know. And it's a terrible perversion of love to pull the heartstrings of the people and convince them to use that emotion to go and kill more people. You know, and it's not what it's about. It's about opening up our hearts and realizing that we have the ability to call this system out and to change this world in a single day if we just choose to do it. If all the soldiers decided to just put down their guns and not fight anymore and not do this anymore, if all the people decided to just not comply with their leaders, you know, and call this stuff out, call this ridiculous system out for what it is, call the UN out for what it is, call our governments out for what it is. What have they done in the UN? How can the UN be seen as anything sane or anything viable or legitimate at all when you appoint the head of Saudi Arabia as the head of Human Rights Council? You know, they're having a mass beheading, I believe, this month of like 50 people in one day. So, you know, this is the head of our World Human Rights Council. We don't call it. We don't call it out. This is the sort of stuff our governments are supporting, you know, and the war crimes and everything, you know. So it's about love. We could heal the world in a day with love. And that's what I got from that experience in 2008. I mean, when I had that, it opened me up to everything. I felt all the pain. I felt every layer of the fractal just for an instant. It was like a flash. I mean, I don't even know how long it went for. I was just suddenly in this timeless space where I was everywhere all at once. And it was so powerful and so, like, it was like I almost stopped breathing, because when I opened my eyes, I had to take a deep breath, like, you know, it was like I'd getting that life-giving breath, you know, like you passed out and you just taken that one breath that brought you back to life. That's how I felt. And I had took that breath and I fell out of my chair onto my knees and I cried for 7.5 hours. Wow. After that experience, because I just felt everything. And I realized how quickly and how easily we could change things. But then I realized, well, it's a process. You've got to guide people back to this point of knowledge by the process, but you've got to awaken them to all the darkness that's going on in the world. They've got to look at this darkness. They've got to look at all of this negative stuff and understand how to process it, because it's just light. All information is light. It doesn't matter if it's bad information, if it's horrible negative stuff that you're seeing around you, it's light, it's information, it's light, it's how you process it. And if you don't know that that issue is happening, then how can you ever heal that issue? And all it will take for you to heal that issue is to open your heart, have empathy. Empathy is the interface. Empathy is the interface of how we interact with the matrix and how we can get out of this prison. All we have to do is use the correct interface by opening our hearts, apply empathy to the global situation, this current world situation, and we'll heal it in a day. You know, and I got all of that out of that meditation, and I've had it all confirmed for me in ceremony. And yeah, we can make a difference by this simple readjustment of our perspective, and it's such a slight, simple readjustment, you know. And something I found out in that experience was the perfection of myself. You know, I'm perfect. I'm perfect because I'm perfect at being me. No one can be me better than me. And being me with whatever flaws I perceive I have is what I came here to do, to experience life from that unique perspective. Obviously, because that's why I'm here, that I exist. Otherwise, if I wasn't here to experience that, then I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't exist. So I'm perfect at being me with all of my flaws, whatever they are. I'm here to grow, but I'm still perfect at being the person that was supposed to come here with these flaws to experience reality from that perspective. So why do I think myself imperfect? Why would anyone think themselves imperfect? And you see that in yourself, and you understand the uniqueness and the beauty and the perfection of that experience. And then you see it in others, and then suddenly all the barriers are gone. All the barriers between everybody break down, and suddenly you can respect everybody no matter how different they are from you. You can respect them and you can love them. And that simple understanding, it can change everything. It can change the world in 3 seconds if we just have that realization.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Well,
it's true, you know, it's true, and it's frustrating. It gets incredibly frustrating for me that I can see how simple it would be. And I don't know if you really get what I said. I think you did, but, you know, if people can really see that, it's so simple, and it's so pure, and it's so right, it's so true. You listen to it with your heart. It makes sense, and it opens your heart, and it's so right and so pure, and suddenly all the barriers are gone. And we could change the world in a flash. We really, really could if people could just have this new perspective of what they actually are. You know, that's why it's eternal, an internal thing. It's this internal change we have to make, but then we have to apply it to the world. If we don't apply it to the world, then it doesn't work. You've got to have that physical application, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people block themselves from experiencing themselves and giving them that self-love, and then being able to love everything else out of fear, just as we have said before. This thought is really powerful.
It's programming, brother. It's fear, but it's programming. People are programmed to have this fear and have this judgment, and the judgment of themselves, you know. This way people simply cannot see their own divinity. They're scared of it. They're scared of taking self-responsibility. They're scared of sticking their head up and saying, hey, I actually mean something. You know, hey, I have power. Hey, I can call this what it is. I don't have to do what you say. What I need to do is the right thing. What I need to do is what is good for my spirit and good for my soul and what is good for these beautiful brothers and sisters around me. You know, and if what you say I should do contravenes all this, then I need to call you out, because I employ you to manage things for me in a responsible way, and you're making me act irresponsibly, and you're telling me that I have to. How do you have the right to do that? You know, I mean, everybody can do this. Everybody can call this out and ask these questions, you know, but they're afraid to do so because they're afraid of being judged by people around them. And people are so ready to ridicule you if you speak out as well, because of course if you take someone's power away, then you give them the opportunity to ridicule someone else. Then they'll do that. Sorry. Oh, I had a sneeze brewing while I was trying to talk
Bless
to you.
You
there. Yeah, that was. I could feel that coming. I'm going, no, go away. But you know, people. If you take everybody's power away from them, then people are very, very willing to you know, jump on somebody else and suck their energy from them, because that's the only opportunity they've got to feel good about themselves is by degrading somebody else, you know. So that's unfortunately a product of this society as well, you know. When you get humankind and you beat them and crush them and squash them into a box and tell them they have to walk between the lines, you know, they like to pick on people around them. It makes them feel better about themselves. You know, this is how we get our energy, unfortunately, is from other people, because most people are so disconnected from source that they're not able to get it from source. And so, unfortunately, the most readily supply of energy that's available around them is other people, and that's a real unfortunate thing.
You're so right. Well, the message that I'm going to take away is really uplifting one. I found the last words said really uplifting in a sense, and I think this is a good point to end the show here. This wonderful coming together with you, Max. Thank you so much of taking your time, sharing your thoughts with us. Really amazing. We're going to prep the show up with some pictures and get it on its way and let you know when it's done. And hope we can do this together in the future.
Happy to. Absolutely happy to come on and speak to you anytime. What country are you guys in?
I'm from Lithuania and stuff. I'm from US. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're in the morning.
Yeah. I'm at night.
She's night and I'm just in the evening here, so we're really spread out.
Okay, well, you never know, we might be able to catch up at some stage.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Happy to come on for a chat anytime.
Thank you so much for coming
here.
Okay.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the day. Yeah.
Bye
bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye.